So when I bring effort to my practice, any observations or aha moments, nothing this time?
Yeah, I realize I'm backwards. For me, the effort, when I bring effort to things, I tend to mess things up, or I tend to resist them. So for me, the effort I bring is, or that I'm learning, is willingness and a lot of letting go, a lot of kind of clearing house and you know, getting here is good and good enough. And a bad meditation is better than no meditation and a lot of crazy thoughts. But it's not the willfulness I'm used to trying to bring or the ego energy, you know, that I'm used to bringing to things. So it's more, I think it's more of a spiritual willingness to let things work or be open to things. And a lot of letting go of things. Right now it sounds better than any shopping spree or gathering of things could ever be.
So the flavor of effort is not this kind of exertion that we might be used to, this kind of all out, I'm gonna do this kind of thing. It has a different sense altogether. Great. Good, thank you. Anyone else?
I just noticed when I was sharing that compassion has to be present for me to have effort to be present, mm-hmm. to really have it, just to be able to be present. There has to be a compassionate place where I'm generating or not generating, as the case may be.
Okay, great. Thank you. Any other thoughts about effort in your practice? Any thoughts about, so what was the focus of when you were thinking about effort? What was the sort of playing field? Was it your meditation practice? Did you easily see that effort served you in a much broader way in your practice? Did you consider that your practice is a 24/7 effort? Any differences in what the effort in your time on the cushion is versus your time in the workplace, for instance? Okay.
Yeah. No, no difference. I think that, and I'm losing my train of thought on what exactly the question was, but for me, if I decide that I'm going to make the effort to sit down or make the effort to be thoughtful in what I say at work or with my family, everything becomes easier. It all becomes, I just, you know that I'm going to make the conscious effort to be with what's going on. It's a much easier situation.
So intention plays a big part there. Mm-hmm. Great. Okay. Does anyone dare to take a look at the 37 Wings of Awakening? Uh-huh. Yeah. So I just want to reiterate something that Mary has mentioned the last couple of meetings, that you know, this can be a very difficult material to tackle, and it's quite difficult to read through this material. Thanissaro Bhikkhu is a wonderful scholar and translator of the suttas, and the book basically is laid out in chapters where there's initially a commentary followed by a large selection of suttas which support the teaching of one of the groups within the 37 Wings of Awakening. What I find really difficult is often where to find the heart in these teachings. So for myself, and I think for many of us, we need to find a place where we can feel that we can connect to the teachings as a person, as a human being, not just with the mind, but with the heart-mind. So a particular challenge for me in reading this was trying to find that place, which I did not find initially when I was reading this. This is not particularly new material. I mean, I've been over the four wise efforts a number of times, and they're pervasive in all of the teaching, this notion of effort. But what finally kind of hooked me was when he's writing, he frequently uses the term meditator in the way that the Buddha used the term monk. So if you read the suttas, you're constantly in the realm of monks, right? A group of monks gathered together at the deer park. A monk goes out into the woods and sits under a tree. You know, constantly the language, the reference to the activities of monks, the experience of monks. Usually there is no particular word used to describe the activities of lay people in a way that actually kind of establishes a framework of practice for lay people. But Tanjeff continually uses this term meditator. And it's also clearly not in the frame of sitting on the cushion at all. No. It's in that much larger frame of where is our practice in our everyday life. No. So there's certainly discussion of what takes place on the cushion and the effort that is required there and what is useful there. But much more discussion about what is useful to us in terms of effort in our everyday life. Some of you may have spent time trying to read some of the suttas, and I know the experiences are not always so good. The suttas can be quite difficult to read. They can be very dry, they're very repetitive, the language is quite old, doesn't necessarily come to you easily. But and my own experience can sort of vary between blah, 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 and wow, amazing. So one of the amazing things that occurred to me was around this notion of this use of the word meditator. So in the end of this section on right effort, he uses two of the suttas which discuss right effort. And when in the discussion of right effort, they repeat two phrases. They repeat a phrase for each description of the four wise exertions. In one of them, this phrase is used over and over again, reflecting appropriately. And in the other sutta, this phrase is used over and over. He should know from experience that. He should know from experience. So this really kind of pointed me to what I think is most interesting about this notion of skillful exertion or skillful effort. One of the really wise things that the Buddha did was not provide us with yet another cosmology or philosophy of being or order. He didn't do that. What he provided us with is the notion that knowledge is something that can be acquired as a skill, not as simply a text, a set of books, a philosophical discussion. But knowledge is a skill that we can learn. And then he went on to very skillfully and explicitly describe how this knowledge can be arrived at and how the skills were to be used. This idea that there is skillful action and that we can acquire knowledge through acting in a skillful way is a really liberating idea, chiefly because it lets us learn from our mistakes. It doesn't come out and posit that there are answers that you must learn, that there are correct answers even. No. It presents a way of acquiring knowledge. And it presents a way in which we can, in fact, continue to acquire knowledge and increase our knowledge continually. And what is it that is required when we act skillfully? It's pretty simple. We have to pay attention. We have to pay attention. We have to pay attention when we're on the cushion, right? And we're meditating. A certain type of attention. Attention that we pay by way of developing concentration. Attention that we pay to our when we're undertaking insight practice. But in our daily life also, attention. But attention in a certain way. So we need to pay attention to the pre-existing conditions at any moment. The conditions that exist at any moment. And we need to pay attention to how we act in relationship to those conditions. And finally, we need to be able to learn from this, so we need to be able to pay attention to what is the result of that interaction. So this creates a kind of feedback loop, right? Something happens. I have an experience at work, let's say, with a coworker, which turns out to be very difficult. And I'm perhaps confronted in a provocative way with something that I've failed to do. This is this set of pre-existing conditions. And I react in a certain way based on what my own makeup is, what I bring to the situation. I may react skillfully or unskillfully. And after the interaction is complete, I may be wise enough to look and see what happened, what was the result of that interaction. Based on the knowledge that I've acquired, I have the opportunity then to use that the next time this kind of cycle takes place. So that the skill that we acquire in this way allows us to keep increasing our knowledge so that we can act in ever more skillful ways. And so attention having this component of the awareness of the conditions that exist, my actions, and my ability to see what the result of those actions was. Any questions at all so far? So when we look at the four right exertions. I don't know about you, but the language seems somewhat different than we're usually presented when we have a nice talk about Buddhist practice. Okay? We're supposed to generate desire. We're supposed to generate desire. Right? This is not usually what we talk about. Right? We talk about getting rid of desire. Desire is bad. We don't want to cling to anything. And now we're supposed to generate desire. We're supposed to, the sutta says, the language is endeavoring. We're supposed to go make a big effort. Right? This also seems kind of unlike what we usually hear. Arousing persistence, upholding and exerting one's intent. So those seem more in line somewhat with what we're used to. But this idea of generating desire is definitely not something we hear frequently. But the difference is that we are generating desire to either deal with unskillful things, that is, abandon or guard against them, or the desire to acquire skillful things, okay, to develop and maintain them. So those are the four types of exertion, so we can guard against something that is unskillful. That is, you'll frequently hear the language around guarding the sense doors. Right? So if we're confronted with something, particularly through the field of vision, maybe we know that we're susceptible to seeing beautiful young women on the beach, and that gives rise to some mental activity that's not exactly healthy. Well, we just don't look at that. Right? We also avoid the instances which give rise to unskillful activity. And we also then develop the skillful attributes which we have. Right? So we should not forget that we do have skillful attributes, right? All of us. Okay? And that we want to take the time to develop those. And we want to also take time to develop attributes which we do not possess, right? Which we know we are weak in, perhaps, that we really need to spend the time developing. And we need to maintain the skillfulness that we have acquired. Guard, avoid, develop, and maintain. So you can do as much reading about that as you like. But I think that actually the general area of what is skillful and what is not skillful is a really important area to focus on. So the kind of effort that we're talking about is not the exertion to exhaustion sort of effort. And it's not also the kind of, I think that kind of sort of Vigo uses this phrase, that the knee-jerk response of efforting. So we have this, and probably you may have heard some of these discussions around this term efforting, that there's too much efforting. It's written in equation with a kind of unhealthy sort of striving. So that's also not a good measure of what we're talking about here in terms of wise effort. Right? It's also not moderation in all things. It's not that either. No, that's not the middle way. Moderation in all things is not the middle way. So what is it? What kind of effort are we looking at? So what we're really looking at is an effort that places us in tune with our own abilities so that we can act in the most skillful way with whatever it is that faces us. So it's this idea of tuning up our effort, knowing what we're capable of doing, knowing what is appropriate for us to do. Some time ago, there was a book that came out that was called, Flow, The Flow, by a Czech writer, his name is Csikszentmihalyi. And his notion wasn't that he was really skillfully presented, is that if you look at people who are really successful and happy in their lives, and he used an examples of some athletes who performed at a very high level, that was one of the examples he used, that what becomes obvious is that while they seem to be exerting a great deal of effort, there's also at the same time a notion of effortlessness. That is, they've moved into this area where they're perfectly attuned their own capabilities to whatever is the task at hand. And so the notion of stress or this striving is removed. Effort is not removed. There is still effort. And there was effort which preceded their ability to perform at that level. Okay. It can be something as simple as knowing for yourself what time of day it is that you can do certain things. Now, we all know that for each of us, perhaps the morning is the best time for you to get something done, something difficult that you just have to undertake. So wouldn't it be wiser to do it in the morning when you're most capable, rather than putting it off till the afternoon when you knew you were going to be tired and it was going to be twice as difficult and you were going to be cranky? Right? Much more skillful to do that, to be aware. So there's also effort in learning about ourselves, this self-examination part of it. Okay, so I don't know if any of you have been here, the few times that Lama Marud has been here, but he has some interesting practices. But one of which is very simple, and that is, he says, for some reason, every 2.5 hours you must do this. You have a little notebook, okay? And every 2.5 hours, you sit down with your little notebook and you think about how you've done for the last 2.5 hours. With your intention to be kind to your coworkers and whatever it happened to be. And you take a look at that. Okay, this is the third part, right? Context, action, examination. Look at the results. We create another feedback loop. We create another opportunity to be successful, to learn more, to not make the same mistakes over and over again. Yeah. much healthier. There are surprising things that, you know, that things that can be really successful, wise efforts that we may not think about. For instance, and I'll use this other example from Lama Marut, which I think is pretty good. He frequently talks about going to the bathroom in a very specific way. So let's take the case where you're confronted with some with a provocative person, somebody who just really, like when you see this person, you just know there's going to be a problem. And you are very uncomfortable to the point of where you know you really cannot have a successful interaction with this person at all, and the opportunity arises where you have to speak to this person. It might be really wise for you if you know that his provocation may be very successful and you might react in a really angry way. A really wise thing for you to do might be to leave. It might be to just leave. And you can always say, I have to go to the bathroom. Right? You can always say that. Nobody's going to say, no, you can't. Right? While you're in the bathroom, maybe you're thinking about what it is that sets you off so much with this person. What is that? You might take that as your object of meditation. You might work with it for a number of weeks when you go to the bathroom. And the next time that you meet this person and have the opportunity to engage with them, you might reach the second stage where the really wise thing for you to do might be to take it. Right? To just sit there and listen to whatever this person has to say without having to respond or react at all, but to realize that you can be comfortable in the presence of this person. You're not going to be annihilated. Right? Lama Marut calls this the Mukta Bandha Asana. Mukta means mouth. Bandha means close. Close your mouth. So the third interaction, after you've again spent some time creating your feedback loop, thinking about what it is that sets you off and how you might learn to deal with the person in a different way, the third meeting might be the time at which you could bring some real compassion in this interaction and have the perception that this person is probably suffering just the way you are, and that you can bring some compassion to bear in that situation, and that actually it's perfectly fine to be with this person, no more enemy. So these things just don't happen. Right? They happen because we choose to live our life in a way that we deploy our skillful effort, we pay attention, and we develop our skills and learn from these actions. Any questions, thoughts? Tim?
I have lots of thoughts. It's just amazing. What keeps on coming up when referring to the examination of the moment and making sure that I'm doing it in a skillful way. My 5-year-old grandson has a way of letting me know that I've got issues and I've got things to look at and try to keep those in mind as I'm talking with him to keep things first and foremost honest and truthful. And that becomes a very difficult task at best. There's so many things that what you're talking about is there's like a lot of things are coming up at one time, and it's hard to kind of hold on to them as they kind of zoom on by. But the idea about effort is something that I find interesting, and I think you mentioned earlier that intention is what really kind of gets me on the path. Without having to have effort, it becomes effortless in order to do something. Thank you for being here, by the way. Nothing really is there, rather than the idea that there's ways of keeping that in touch without being in a monastic life. As a lay person, there's many ways we can find skillful ways of handling.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think there are two aspects to a wise effort. One of them is what we've already talked about primarily, and that is attention. Okay? But the second one is having admirable friends. Okay? This is the way it's described in the sutra, having admirable friends. Okay? So there's a lot of emphasis put on, in our practice on finding out for yourself, right? Your own experience. But it's not often also put forward that we're supposed to rely on these admirable friends, people whose efforts have led them to a place where we can learn from them. The Kalama Sutta is one that's often used to talk about this notion of using your own experience as a guide. But in this very same sutta, it also talks about the importance of having admirable friends. Let me just read you a couple of little passages. So this is on appropriate attention. This is called the internal factor for developing a wise effort. The quality of appropriate attention in a learning monk, nothing else is so helpful for attaining the supreme goal. A monk striving effortlessly, appropriately, reaches the ending of stress. Now, admirable friends are regarded as the external elements. Right? A monk who is a friend to admirable people, one reverential, respectful, doing what his friends advise, alert, mindful, attains step by step the ending of all fetters. So in another place, the Buddha also says that spiritual friends are the whole of the practice. From this standpoint, the value of spiritual friends in guarding and protecting our own practice. All right, so that's all that I have to say about the four right exertions. Now, next week, I get to choose between whether we're going to talk about the four bases of power, or iddhipada, or the five faculties. And I'm going to choose the four bases of power because, for one thing, they're almost never talked about. And for the other thing, how could you resist this? He appears, he vanishes. He goes unimpeded through walls, ramparts, and mountains, as if through space. He dives in and out of the earth as if it were water. He walks on water without sinking, as if it were dry land. Sitting cross-legged, he flies through the air like a winged bird. With his hand, he touches even the sun and moon, so mighty and powerful. So we'll all learn how to do that. So it's going to be focused on concentration, which is something we typically talk about only to a certain level, and I think it's really helpful to take it the next step. And it's a practice that I really enjoy and think is really important. So thank you all for listening. I have a couple of announcements.
Thank you for listening. To learn how you can support the teachers and Dharma Seed, please visit dharmaseed.org/donate.